Welcome to the Visual Storytelling Podcast. My name is Fred Ranger, and I'm so happy that you're joining me this week for another inspirational conversation. I have a very special guest with me today. Her name is Charisse May, and she is a photographer, a visual storyteller, and she's been published in New York Times, O Magazine, the White House website, People Magazine, and so many more. Charisse, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Fred. Happy to be here.
You know what, Charisse? We've been discussing online. We are also part of the Leica Street Photography Collective, but it's the first time we're one-on-one, so I have so many questions for you. I'm excited to be spending some time. And first of all, for the couple people who don't know you personally, can you walk us through how you found out about photography and how you decided to make it your actually day job?
Sure. So photography for me started out as a childhood curiosity. My mom was a high school teacher, a business school teacher, and also the advisor for the school newspaper. So she brought a camera home one day. I asked to play with it. I started playing around with the camera. They bought me some film and I started taking pictures. So what excited me as a little girl was seeing those pictures in the small viewfinder, the camera, seeing something through that little window, and then getting the film developed and seeing the print, the actual print, so that I could see what I saw through the lens of that camera. And I became, I guess, the de facto family photographer, so to speak. And I would show up at family events with my camera or my mom's camera until they bought me one. And I would take pictures and then my parents would take me to drop the film off to be developed. And then we would go pick it up once the prints were ready. And I would show up to the family events and spread all the photos out and everyone would take a look through it. And for me as a child, what excited me was the joy that it brought my family. So they were able to, once they saw the photos, they were laughing and just, talking about those moments. And so that excited me as a little child and it encouraged me to keep going. So I continued to take pictures. My parents actually, they nurtured that curiosity, and I would say my family did too. So what they would do is like Christmas, each Christmas, upgrade my camera. So my cameras got a little bit better, each year, once they saw that I took an interest in it.
That is those are nice parents if you're getting an upgrade every year. But would you say that this was kind of love at first click and then you said, oh my God, I want to make a living out of it? Because I think you didn't go straight into photography. You did the graphic design, right?
Correct. So it was love at first click, but it didn't click that could be my career.
Uh-huh.
It didn't click that I, my purpose would be a storyteller. So for me, my path was a little bit different. And I knew I wanted to do something creative because I was, that child that I loved music, I loved drawing, coloring, all those things. So I had actually made up in my mind, I'm going to be a graphic designer. I'm going to work for an ad agency in creative, and I'm going to create like these campaigns. And, I was just excited about that. So I actually, I went to Howard University in Washington, D.C. HU, and I had to do it. And so I went to school and I was an advertising major and electronic studio minor. And my plan was, again, to be in that ad agency world. A recruiter from Gannett came to the school and recruited me to work for their newspapers. I had never considered a career in newspapers. Wasn't really interested in journalism. I wasn't on the school paper or anything like that. No aspirations for that career. And I ended up working for newspapers. So I worked for a number of papers from Tennessee to New Jersey to DC. And I did that for a number of years. But throughout it all, photography was always there. because I would still take pictures on the side. So that was my thing. It was almost like an outlet, I guess, from work, something that I really enjoyed doing that brought me joy. And so I would actually do that when I wasn't, you know, working as a graphic designer. And it was even to the point where I was actually doing paid work, you know, as a photographer. So I would do graphic design during the day, and then I would do photography when I was off, you know, from my day job, quote unquote day job.
Yeah.
So I did that for a number of years, and how I got to photography, solely photography, is after working for some years with Gannett. I was last at the USA Today paper, and I got laid off. And so for me, that layoff was my blessing in disguise to kind of kick me out there to say, you know what, I'm gonna try this photography thing. And so photography for me was first a childhood curiosity, then it was a hobby, then it was a serious hobby, then it was like paid work. And then photography went from, okay, I like taking pictures, to an appreciation for storytelling. And I fell in love with storytelling. And so that brought me to where I am now, where I started to really focus on storytelling more. And storytelling for me is when you make a connection to bring people in to moments of history, moments of time. It's less about me going in and just taking from someone or a situation, but storytelling is more so going in, meeting people, making that connection, and showing people, showing the world, like, this is who this person is. Or this is what happened, you know, in this moment of time, and bringing people into that.
And that's such an inspiring path, because, I mean, from graphic designer to, you know, really understanding the power of storytelling and photography, to today where you use your photography to actually not only tell a story, but tell a story that actually, you know, thousands and millions of people connect with. I want you to talk about, you know, social justice, because that's something that is dear to your heart, I know, and you've been contributing to that, I want to say, movement, and that, you know, way of telling a story that connects with people, that can either change their mind or bring them to understand a reality that they're not necessarily part of. So can you talk to me about how photography and your tool, which is your camera, has helped you tell your message through storytelling?
Yeah. So I think, and it's, you know, you saying photography as a tool, correct. The camera, you know, becomes that tool. And I always talk about, or I always say that a lot of times when you think about different people who are on like kind of polar opposites of thinking, whether that be political, social, you know, things like that. A lot of times I think it's because you just don't know about that person's life, or you don't understand it because that wasn't your story. That wasn't your life. But for me, what I find is a lot of times I believe in the power of images. So if I am sharing images of someone, a culture, you know, something that's important to them, which may not be important to someone else because that's not their values, or they just don't know, they don't understand. And I think what photography can do, what an image can do, is it can bring someone in to have more understanding, or to get to know people that they don't know, to see a story, to hear a story that is not their story, but have a better understanding what it is. And then with that, it gives you more of a window and a connection to why certain things are important to certain people, or why people feel a certain way about something, or how, you know, how important things are in helping people to turn the page, or to just live life like all of us want to do. Mm. Like, when it comes down to it, we all want the same things, but it's just, we have different paths. Our stories are different. We were raised differently, or we grew up differently. You know, if I didn't grow up with money, then I don't understand what it's like to, you know, have that.
Yeah.
And so my life story is going to be different. My values are going to be different of certain things, and I'm just not going to understand some things. But I think through photography, I'm able to share some things that people maybe necessarily wouldn't seek out themselves, but then they can see it, you know, in those images, and they're like, oh, like I didn't know, or I didn't understand, or, you know, hey, they're just like me, or they, you know, this person wants the same things I do. It just looks different.
Yeah, Charisse, what you're saying is so true, because one thing I've learned through my photography is that, to your point, the context may be different, the upbringing may be different, but there's a lot we can relate to. You know, a story is a story. Love is love, you know, stuff like that. So when you start telling story with your camera, your lens, you realize very quickly that we're all humans after all, right? At the end of the day, regardless of the, you know, boundaries of the countries, the color, whatever. And I think that's something that's very powerful in the work you do. And I want to bring you on a, you know, bit of a controversial aspect of photography, because there's the good side, and then there's also the bad side, right? Photography can be used to portray a community or someone or a country or whatever in a certain way. So how do you navigate that personal view on things and that photojournalistic, you know, aspect of photography, and then the, I will say it, the propaganda that some of people use in some instances, you know?
Well, Fred, that's why it's important, and that's why I'm such a big advocate for diverse stories and storytellers, because it does matter who the storytellers are, because you're going to have a, like I was saying before, like we all have different experiences. You know, we've grown up differently. You know, our family structures are, you know, maybe different, or where we live and things like that. So I think it's important to have a diversity in those voices that are telling the stories, because they're going to have a different understanding. And so that's one of the things I think is critical when doing that, because honestly, like, sometimes somebody's just not going to know, or they're not going to understand, so they're not going to be looking the same way at the story that I may be looking at it, just because I may have some insight because that person's life is similar to mine. So for me, it's about bringing in more voices, diversifying, and not just pulling from that same pool of photographers or people to, you know, tell these stories. Because it's the same thing, like if you think about with photojournalism, if you have a pool of photographers, all of us are going to have different perspectives or something different. We can go to the same event, but be looking at different things. And that's all based on who you are.
Yeah.
So absolutely. That's why I think it's important to not have like all the same people, even though it may be the same event.
Yeah.
You know, looking at something or reporting something, because you're going to get that same perspective. You're going to get that same story. But just think, like, if you had a diversity of journalists at that same event, you're going to get so many different stories.
You're totally right. And one of the you know, guests on the podcast was Stefan Kussman. I don't know if you know him. He's a French photographer living in New York, and he does the red carpet, you know, in Cannes. And that was like way back when, in the 80s, when everybody was shooting the stars, when they're on the red carpet, you know, front facing, oh, nice dress, blah, blah, blah. He was, you know, doing another angle of the star looking at the photographers or looking at, and again, today it might seem very, you know, common, but back then people were like, oh my God, thank God there is a different voice in photography, a different perspective. And yeah, it ended up being a book, and people would be interested in, you know, copying his style. Now you look at photographers and they like to take the photo of the photographers being photographed and stuff like that. So it's interesting. Yeah. It's valid also for points of views and culture and politics. Let's talk about politics. You are, right now, people can't see, but you're in front of a very, very nice portrait of Michelle Obama. And I want to talk about that because I think you and I messaged you one day and you're like, I'm about to hop on the plane with the president or whatever. I'm like, what? Cherise? Like, yeah, you're just telling me that you're dropping that like casual conversation. I'm about to hop with the president on the plane. Can I call you back? Whatever. I'm like, okay. So that's very valid reason that you don't have time to talk to me. But how do you get there? You are an inspiration to a lot of young female or male photographer that want to do that for a living. How do you get to photograph the First Lady of the United States of America?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I first started as a member of the press pool during the second term of the Obama administration.
Yep.
And for me, the way it happened was, and this is one thing you'll hear me talk about often, is the importance of community.
Yeah.
And the importance of joining groups that are going to advocate for you and that are going to provide valuable information and give you a chance to network and, you know, meet different people. So shout out to NPPA. I joined this organization, NPPA, and with that organization, you get a profile page. And so in that profile page, you can put your contact info, a link to your website, and then you can share a few photos on your profile. So there was a photo agency called Neurophoto out of Rome. And they reached out to me one day, sent an email, and said, hey, you know, we saw your work, you know, we love your work, and we were wondering if you'd be interested in working with us. We're looking for someone to cover the White House.
And you're like, White House? Let me think about it.
And I had never, it's not like that was on my radar of something I was trying to pursue. So I was like, it got me thinking like, okay. But I'll be honest with you, like I hadn't, since I wasn't in journalism, you know, like on that side of journalism, I hadn't heard of Neurophoto. So I was like, I wasn't sure who they were. And since it was international too, I was like, well, is this a scam? Like, what's going on? So I actually reached out to NPPA and some other people just to see, like, have you heard of them?
They're legit. Yeah. You're good.
Yeah. So they came back and said, no, they're legitimate. They're good. So I was like, oh. So I started, you know, covering some events for them to, you know, put on their wire. And what happens is, and a lot of times you'll hear me say too, like, tell your story, and it's all about sharing and things like that. So as I started covering more events and doing my work, my photos start to circulate out there because they were being picked up for stories and things like that. And so some editors started to see my name out there connected to some of these photos that were being published.
Nice.
And so then I started getting contacted by other editors. I will also say, like, I got bit by the bug of photojournalism. And once I started doing that work, I was like, I kind of like this. Like, this is cool. Like, it's putting me right where I love history. I love culture. And this is a historical presidency. This is great. This feels really good, like doing this work. So I wanted to do more. So I started to seek out opportunities to network with editors from different publications as well. And so I joined some other organizations. I ended up joining Women Photojournalists of Washington, WPOW. And I was actually the former president the immediate past president of that organization. But I ended up joining them and just started looking around for opportunities for portfolio reviews. And I'll say, like, anyone who has aspiration of doing this work, portfolio reviews are like really good because they put you in front of editors, they put you in front of creative editors and those who are making the decisions on hiring photographers to do assignments. So I started doing that as well in meeting creative directors and editors, and it becomes relationship and building a relationship, and it's building trust because they want to be able to call on someone that they know is going to get the job done that they need. So, you know, and it takes work to establish that.
Exactly. And I'm looking at the amount of organization you're a member of, and it's very impressive, to be honest. And do you sleep, Charisse, sometimes, or are you?
I do.
Okay.
Like it's funny you said that, Fred, because sometimes people will say, "Well, I was going to call you for something, but I know you're always busy." I'm not always busy. Not always busy, people. I'm really not. I'm really not.
Said the person who an hour ago was at the Leica event, you know, doing stuff and photos I saw on Instagram. So speaking of Leica, let's talk about it. Again, this is not a gear show, but people like to know what the visual storytellers use to tell their stories. And you made a decision to go with the same camera that I have, you know, Q2, and you also have the SL and stuff. So what led you to that camera brand? Because it's not for everyone. We know that.
Yeah.
And it's also, I would say there's some people who think that people who have Leica, you know, it sits on the shelf and stuff, and you're the, you know, the proof that no, this is a capable day in, day out workhorse camera, especially the SL that you use. So can you talk a bit about that?
Well, I put my gear through its paces. You know, especially with the photojournalism work, I'm in a lot of different conditions, weather-wise, you know, a lot of like fast pace, you know, things, you know, dark hallways, garages, like it's been everywhere. And like I said, I put it through its paces. So I know it works. And in terms of what I use most often, let me go back. So how I got started with using Leica was, I was looking for, and this is around the time where people were really looking at mirrorless cameras and things like that. And even within the industry of photojournalism, they started to switch systems to get on board with the mirrorless
cameras.
Sony
was a big brand, I guess, for a lot of those photographers, right?
Yeah. And so, and I had tried, you know, some of the other brands, and it just wasn't it for me. And so I had been covering some protests and uprisings, and I wanted something that was like compact but powerful. And I was, you know, at this point, I was looking for something that was like in my price point, you know, my budget, but also that could do the work and I could do assignment work with it. And, you know, it would be it. So I actually started, I picked up a Deluxe.
Like also Deluxe. The APS-C, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fixed lens, mm-hmm. APS-C. And I started using that at like protests. And it was amazing because it was so small and compact that I could get in between people and things like crowds. I could go high, I could go low, like very easy. And the quality of the images was amazing for that little compact camera, crop sensor. And so I used that for a while. Like I put it through its paces. And it's funny because people will, you know, people who don't know will say, oh, you know, they talk about the Leica look, whatever. There's no But I will say there is a Leica look. And I know
I would agree.
I've used other cameras. You said what?
I said I would agree. Yes.
Yeah. So, and I've used other cameras. So I, you know, I see a difference. I see a difference in the files that I get and how much before I may have had to massage, you know, the images to, you know, see it how it should be seen. But what I noticed when I started using the Leica camera was it just the way the dynamic range, you know, of the cameras was amazing.
Yeah.
The lens quality, amazing. And it just looks so real, like the skin, how it handles skin tones, textures. Like I feel like I with my image, I could like reach out and touch it and feel the texture, you know, that I'm seeing. It like shows you like everything, you know, like that. So I was like, oh, wow, this is pretty amazing. So I started to look at Leica a little closer. Like, okay, I need to graduate, you know, from this Deluxe because I want to use it more, you know, with my work. So I went from the Deluxe to the CL.
Mm-hmm.
Because I said, oh, well, now I need something with an interchangeable lens. So I went to the CL and I started using the CL. From there, I went with the SL2 and the Q2.
That's a very good combo.
Yeah, so those two.
Full frame all the way.
No, let me go back. That's not true. Okay. I went from the CL to an M10P.
Oh, there you go, M10P. So you got your fix of a rangefinder shooting a bit.
Yeah, I was like, oh, let me, I start looking that up, and I was like, I'm gonna. So what happened was I was going to Ghana, and this was going to be a solo trip. So I didn't want to be gear heavy. I didn't want to scream photographer. Yeah. But I knew I wanted to document that trip. So that's when I got the M10P. And I said, I'm going to take one camera. Before I got that, I said, I'm going to take one camera, one lens, and that's it. M10P.
Was it a 35 or what was the lens? 50?
No, I got a 50 actually.
Oh, there you go. Nifty 50.
Yeah. And I just took that and it was amazing. Like
quiet shutter, small camera. Yeah,
exactly.
Beautiful small image quality. Yeah.
Yeah. Image quality amazing. So then I knew like, okay, with some of this photojournalism work, I'm gonna need autofocus.
Of course.
Just because I'm not gonna have the time, you know. But what I did was I'd start using the Q2 and the SL2, but I was still using the M10P as well, even in the photojournalism work.
So you had three cameras with you at all time, or?
You said what?
You had three cameras with you for those gigs, or?
Not all times, but a lot of times. A lot of times I did. I would bring all three because if I had a little bit more time, I would pull out the M10 and use that for some things. Or I may put like I had a 28 lens I would put on the M10P and I would use that for some of my wider shots.
Yeah.
And just use that for, you know, the wide shots. But
The Elmarit or the Simulux or the Simicron?
It was the Simulux.
The Simulux. Wow. Okay. So you went all in. But then you discovered the power, and I'm showing my Q2 here of that lens. Which actually might be a little bit wider, to be quite honest, than a true 28, like on an M system. Yeah. But still, this lens, I think it's a steal that you're getting that lens with, you know, a Leica body attached to it. And of course, the sensor is great. But that lens is worth every single penny of that camera. So from one Q2 lover to another.
yeah, really.
So right now, you're, again, last question about the gear, but right now, what is in your bag when you go on a specific assignment?
SL2, Q2, and M11.
M11, there you go.
Yeah, those are the three.
Nice.
And again, that's not every single time. Sometimes it's the M11 and the SL2. Sometimes it's the Q2 and the SL2. Sometimes it's just the SL2.
What's your favorite personal favorite one, if I may ask? Like if you had to ditch all your cameras, but you're like, Cherise, you're keeping one and one lens.
I couldn't do it.
Me neither, but I like to ask.
I couldn't do it. Yeah, I couldn't, you know, and I say that, Fred, because the variety of my work,
yeah,
the diversity of my work, I couldn't do it because it just, different assignments, you know, different things require a different camera sometimes.
You're right. You have the full right to not answer that question, and
we can. I can't do it.
I can relate. Cherise, let's go back to visual storytelling. So for you, I mean, you've seen a lot of images. You've taken a lot of images. Some of them, I'm sure, you know, moved you and stuff like that. So I know it's not an easy question, but for you, what makes a great image? You know, there's nice images and you can scroll Instagram all day long, but what makes an image that, you know, makes you want to stop and dive in?
Yeah, to me, that all comes to the feeling. Like a great image is one where you feel some kind of emotion, you know,
yeah.
And that may be good or bad emotion, but it's going to make you feel something. And what that comes down to for me is, as the image maker, as a storyteller, is the connection you had, you know, in creating that image. And that's it right there. Like, I want people to look at my images and be able to feel something from it, be able to feel the story, see the story. Because what I want to do is bring people to that moment that I experienced, and I want them to experience it.
That's so great. Do you think a single image can change the world, Cherise?
I think it can.
Yeah. I think so too.
I think it can. Yeah. Images are powerful. They really are. And I think that's why, you have a lot of things going on with people trying to control images.
Yeah. And now you add AI to that and you have a very interesting melting pot of points of views on what is an image and what's the function of a photographer, or should I say image artist now, because it's not just photographers. Now people use AI to create images. So it's a very interesting world we're living in. But to your point, I still believe, it's my core belief that a single image can actually, you know, change somebody's life or a whole country or a specific movement, or, you know, change somebody's mind, to your earlier point. So I think for me, that's ultimately even more powerful, in my opinion, than moving images or movies. As much as I love movies, I love 24 frames per second, always on, but there's something about capturing a fraction of a second that will never come back in time. But it has the potential to cause so much, to your point, joy, pain, change, whatever. But it's very powerful. So
much like music. I love music, and I feel the same way about music. You know, a song can do that same thing. And I talk about as well, for me, creating images is very musical to me. It's very lyrical. There's a cadence. There's a give and take.
I can relate. I think you can see in the background the guitars.
Yeah, and everything. I see them.
Yeah. I was in a band for 15 years, and I get a lot of the same type of emotion and value out of creating images than I was on stage, or, you know, creating a song or making, again, to your point, making people feel something. And the camera is a tool, or the guitar is a tool, whatever. So I think that's a nice analogy there. Cherise, what's your most, you know, I would say, I don't want to say famous, but what's the image that actually put you on the map? And do you think it's your favorite image, or it's an image that you're like, oh, I guess people like it, and if people want to buy it or publish it, I'm cool with that.
Well, I would say I can't like recall one particular image, but I will say during my time photographing the Obamas at the White House
Yeah.
was probably what people started following me, from there.
Of course.
And it helped that they had a lot going on, bringing a lot of people into the White House, and it was a historical presidency, so the world was watching. So I think in that, there were a number of people that would see, those resulting images from that time.
And I love how you've been able to tell a very intimate story in a moment that was so big in time, but you were able to capture some moments of, solitude and some moments of reflection, and also the big moments too. You were able to capture that. So I think I want to commend you because that I'm sure was not an easy task. I'm sure sometimes you were waking up in the morning like, I'm photographing history today, like just no small task.
Well, thank you for that, Fred. It is just like it was surreal, and to be honest with you, that will never get old for me.
Of course.
It would never get old to witness history, not only witness history, but to document it, to be able to tell the stories of those historical moments. That's not something that I would say, oh, here we go again, another day. Oh, it would never be like that for me.
No.
It'd be like, man, like I'm excited about this. Like, I really get to do this. Like, this is amazing.
And
Just
can we talk
thankful.
about the fact that there isn't a lot of women in photography. There is very talented women in photography, but the sheer fact that we are applauding the fact that there are women in photography, it's kind of weird, right? So how is it to also be a woman in a world of a lot of guys with their cameras around, events and stuff?
And I mean it's that's something that is still here today. Like, it is male dominated. So and there are some like fantastic photographers who are women, that do the work. So again, when I spoke earlier about community and joining organizations that advocate for, things that are important to you, that's where that comes into play, because you have that community of support, you have that community that is, giving tips or, helping you to connect to certain things so that you could do well, in that, because it's there's not a lot. Sometimes there are some assignments and some things where I may be the only woman in that, or I may be one of two,
Wow.
within that, or something like that. And to top it off, I'm a black woman. So even, even with that, like sometimes being the only black photographer or the only black woman photographer in certain spaces. So yeah, that still goes on. And again, like, I'm a big advocate for diverse storytellers, and it's I think it's critical, it's important. I mean, just like music, like, who wants to just listen to the same song over and over and over and over again? You want to hear different songs, you want different lyrics, you want to feel, if you're happy and you want some like happy music, or you're going out and you need that music to pump you up, you need that. But if you have a broken heart or, something like that, then you're going to seek out things that may help you mend that broken heart. So,
That's
same way, same thing with photography.
very, very powerful. So speaking of, finding yourself in a very unique ecosystem. So what did you learn over the past, several years? You've been doing that for several years now. And what was the biggest learning about yourself at the end of the day, in doing that day in and day out?
That I could do it,
Ah,
that it's possible.
that's nice.
You know, it's sometimes things seem so big and overwhelming when you're not in it or when you haven't done it. And a lot of times we are our own worst enemies, and we will talk something up so big that it's insurmountable. And it's like, oh man, I can't do that. Like, you know, it's like, because I haven't done that before, and it's not anything that, you know, I have experience with. So being able to get over that hurdle and have that feeling of, I can do this. Like, man, like I was actually building it up to be harder than what it really is. And so for me, what it taught me is to don't focus on how big something is, but to do it, even if you do it scared. And that was like really important for me, to do it scared.
Yeah, I think that's a very motivating way to think about it, because to your point, the hardest part is to start, just to give you that, you know, that day one. You know, the saying says it's one day or day one. I prefer day one than one day.
Yeah, me too.
So who keeps you motivated? So who are your inspiration? You are an inspirational person. I'm sure a lot of people look up to you, but where does Charisma go to stay inspired?
Man, everywhere. So I am on sabbatical right now from teaching, but I'm an adjunct professor at my alma mater, Howard University. And my students would inspire me. And that's the thing, is like, I feel like I'm a lifelong learner, and I feel like you can learn from anyone. And I feel everyone has something to offer if you just listen. And so to me, going back to when you said we were talking about what makes an image powerful, I think if you take the time to listen first, then that's going to help you create a powerful image. It's the listening. So my students inspire me, you know, family and friends. And it's not, and I won't say all the time it's photographers. It's like people in different professions.
Yeah.
For me, it's more so about people who are pursuing their passions, people who are giving their all to something, and they're not letting hurdles stop them. You know, they bump their head or they fall, and those who keep going, that is inspiring to me in doing, you know, what I do. I look at that. Now, if you want to talk about photographers, it's so many. And I'll see stuff sometimes even on social media. I'm like, wow, that is like a beautiful portrait, or that's a powerful image. So it's like, it's kind of hard to start naming names too, because I know I'm going to leave people out that inspire me. But
Is there one photographer that you're like, wow, this photographer is just, you know?
Yeah, I'll mention a few names that are inspirations to me. We have Layla Amatula Baran out of New York. There is Dee Dwyer in Washington, D.C. We have Sheila Prebright in Atlanta. We have... I like Photo Dre's work out of New York.
Yeah.
Jason Roman out of New York. It's so many people for different things. I'll say Sharon Farmer was a big inspiration because she actually was an official White House photographer and the first Black person to be the director of photography there, and wow. woman at that. So definitely Sharon Farmer. Those who are no longer living that are inspirations to me, Gordon Parks, like,
yeah,
to me, like the way he told stories, like, still gives me chills, like how he was able to, I love how he was able to connect with people. When I talked about before of different upbringings and different experiences, he worked on a project where he would go into people's homes. And these are people, they were like white families mm-hmm. that didn't know him, he didn't know them. And he would be in their intimate spaces in their homes as they're like cooking in the kitchen or things like that. And it was just amazing how he was able to make those connections. And then his work on Harlem, like Black people in Harlem, was just inspirational. And then you have Jamel Shabazz out of New York as well, like amazing. So yeah. It's so many voices. I would be remiss. Fred Watkins is actually one of my mentors.
Nice.
And he was actually a mentee of Gordon Parks.
And there you go.
He has taught me a lot because he was a photojournalist and he worked for Life magazine, you know, back in the day, and Ebony and Jed, and you know, did work for ABC. I think he still does some work for ABC. So he gave me a lot of tips, and he was actually the first person that told me, and when I started doing work at the White House, he's the first person that told me, you belong there just as much as anyone else who is there in that press pool. So, you know, do the work, go in, do the work that you know you can do, and know that you belong. So that has stuck with me to this day and has been powerful. So, yeah.
That's enough to give you a lot of confidence to go in and, you know, start doing the work. That's it's very powerful.
Like, yeah. Okay. Yeah. To have someone who, you know, believes in you and tells you like, yeah, I'm here for you. You can do it. And you do good work goes a long way.
What would you tell, 20 years old, Charisse May, you know, just starting out, and you know, if you were to do it again.
I'm not 20 until next year, Fred. What are you talking about?
I know, but I'm just trying to, you know.
What did I tell 20-year-old Charisse? Just to do it scared and just keep going.
Yeah.
Don't let that stop you.
Well, I think that's something to chew on for a lot of people that are not sure if they should do it. I think you heard it from Master Charisse May. You should just do it. Charisse, where can people find out more about, you know, the projects you're working on? And is there any specific projects you want to talk about on this podcast? We're nearing the end of the podcast, but I really want to open up that door because you're doing so many things that I don't know what you're working on at this very moment.
So lately I've been doing a lot of portrait work. I have a couple of personal projects I'm working on, but I'm not ready to talk about them
at this point.
So I'll hold that for a second. But in terms of keeping up with what I'm doing, and the best ways would be my website, probably, and Instagram.
Yeah.
And my website is simply myfirstandlastname.com. So it's CHERISSMAY.com. And my social media is my first and last name. It's really easy. you have my first and last name. You'll find me, you know, either of those places. And I share, like, you know, news and updates. I'm probably going to start an email list too, because I've had people, I think they're like prodding me to do that. I've had people say, set up an email newsletter, please, so we can, and I was like, okay, I need to do that.
So we can see why you met Ted Lasso. I mean, that's for me. I'm interested in learning more.
Well, he's a homeboy. He's from Kansas City. Kansas City, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, because it was like, you know, it was interesting too, because he was like, wait a minute, what are you doing here? I was like, well, I'm not in Kansas City anymore. Like, I'm here. Work here.
Nice, nice. Well, Charisse, I wanna thank you so much because this has been a very, very interesting conversation. I think we can do 5 hours like that and still have stories to tell because we're both storytellers. But I think if there's one thing I get from this conversation, and I'm a big fan of that, is you need to start with story listening. If you want to be a good storyteller, you have to be a good story listener. I think this is the title of the podcast for your episode. And there you go. And Charisse, anytime you're in Montreal, let me know because I would really like to, you know, go out and shoot, learn from you. And also, if I'm in your neck of the wood, I'll let you know too. Maybe we can connect in person. In the meantime, if you guys enjoy what you're hearing, please go on Apple Podcasts and give it a 5-star review. If you have questions for Charisse or myself, you can find us on social media. I'm at Fred Ranger on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and all the platforms. And Charisse, I hope we meet soon, and I wish you a very nice reminder of the weekend.
Thank you, Fred. Thank you so much. And thank you to everyone listening.
Thank you so much. And see you next time.